Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to PhillyTonight.com's Philly Sports Talk on this Eagleless Sunday. We still have a lot to talk about. We have the Eagles-Bears game coming up tomorrow night. We will preview that, and we will get to a whole bunch more. I am Eric Fisher. With me right now, Gordon Glantz. And, Gordon, let's hold off on the game talk just for a little bit. And the news came out on Friday that the Eagles, or I guess it was Malcolm Jenkins doing an interview on WIP, that they're planning some sort of symbolic demonstration or symbolic gesture on Monday during the national anthem. And he hasn't specified exactly what that's going to be. So let's get into that issue first. First of all, I think we'll start off with the question I think we're going to agree on. And I did write a column on this on PhillyFanX.com, but before we get to my column, let's say, do they have the right to protest during the national anthem?
Yes, absolutely. Yep. I mean, a lot of veterans have come out. A lot of people say, well, people fought and died, for the flag, but really they fought and died for the right to, express their freedom of speech. There's some nuances to it. I've heard it put out there that, if you're in your employee's workplace, it's sort of a gray area. If your employer doesn't allow, that personal demonstration. Now, I don't know all the technicalities of it or if it's written, how it's written in the union contract. So, I do know that the NFL is a little hypocritical because if, a player from the Titans wanted to honor the 9/11 victims and they wouldn't let him because it violated the uniform code, and we know what that's all about. That's more about, Under Armour and all those things, and
money,
exactly. They don't mind making everything pink, when it comes to be October, and that's for a good cause. But you can't put red, white, and blue on your cleats on 9/11. Seems a little absurd, unless Under Armour or Nike wants to sponsor it. Then all of a sudden you probably can. So there's a lot to it. But you get to the bottom line. In my opinion, yes, you have the right to do it.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you bring up about the workplace because obviously you're wearing a uniform of a team and you're not just representing yourself, you're representing that team. I mean, in my other job, as a school teacher, I should not wear anything political, I don't think, as a teacher of students, I don't think I should be influencing their political views wearing a Hillary Clinton shirt or a Donald Trump shirt or a Black Lives Matter shirt. I just don't think it's appropriate. So it's interesting, but you brought that up. But I agree with your overall point. I think they, do have the First Amendment right to do it. Although, like I said, it's an interesting point you brought up about the employer. That would be one reason maybe they couldn't. But let's take the next step then, which is they have the right to do it. Should they do it during the national anthem?
Well, it's amazing. When I first heard about this thing and that it started with, sort of a, I don't want to say a flake, but that's the word that pops to mind, a guy that, sort of a different person, let's say, in Colin Kaepernick, to think that he kind of, all people, kind of started this whole thing. When I first heard about it, I'm thinking my immediate thought was, he's doing it for attention. He was a guy who had, a lot of success early in his career. I think his first full year as a starter, I think he started a little bit as a rookie, half a season as a rookie. Then next year he started the whole season and got to the Super Bowl, got a big contract. And since then it's kind of been a downhill slide. He's not starting. They're talking about trading him or releasing him in the off season. There was still some talk during training camp, about, being released. And I'm sure his agent's talking to him about, they want to release you, they're trying to trade you. And then he walks on the field for a preseason game and decides just to sit down. I'm thinking this guy's just, he's doing it under the guise of one thing, but it's probably just an attention grab. He was the only player doing it as far as I knew. So, to think that's where it started and how it's just taken off from there, is just, kind of surreal to me. It just shows, the media can do a lot of positive things, and the media does do a lot of positive things when it wants to. But I think this is one where the media really took a story that could have just been a side note and really made it too much of a story with so many other things going on, not just the election, but just everyday things going on in this country, and made that such a big deal. Now, it has, in a way, brought up an interesting conversation. You know, I mean, Colin Kaepernick, that he's the one who started the conversation when you're talking about, you know, he is, you know, biracial, but he was adopted by a white family and was raised, you know, as far as I know, just kind of middle class. You know, he has, no matter what the situation is, he did start a conversation that probably should be out there. And, you know, it's gotten kind of volatile. I mean, I've been battling with people all day on Facebook about it. And the funny thing is, I'm not even pro or con, really. I'm, you know me, Eric, I'm pretty strong in my opinions. And this is one where I really kind of straddled a fence. I really don't, you know, I can see both sides of it. I kind of support his right to do it, and I support the other player's right to do it. But on the other, you know, he kind of lost me when he wore the socks with the policeman on it, you know, mm-hmm. you know, as pigs, and he kind of lost me with that. He had no more credibility with me on that issue. You know, more reputable players like Malcolm Jenkins on the Eagles are now talking about things, and you know, but now it, to me, it's gotten to be an unoriginal idea. I mean, you know, I think we need to move on to maybe some more productive things if players want to do something about it. And I think, you know, they're in the public eye, and, you know, that whole thing of shut up and play, I don't necessarily buy that, but I just don't know if at this point it's even, it, to me, like I said, it's unoriginal, and I don't know how productive it is at this point. But, again, I just come back to, you know, there's so many other really things that people are doing wrong out there. To sit down during the national anthem is, you know, for him to become so reviled by people, you know, Kaepernick, you know, and then other players who join him, whether doing it for the right or the wrong reasons, you know, I think some people are really kind of jumping out of their skin a little too quickly, and you wonder what their motivations are as well.
Yeah. You know, a lot of good points there, Gordon. I'll try to address a couple of them. One, I think, you know, the athletes, damned if they do, damned if they don't, you know, if they shut up and play, like you said, you know, but then sometimes they'll get criticized for not speaking out, like, well, you know, you guys are just, you know, all you care about is yourself, you know, when you care about what's going on in society, they can't win in that one. I've been on Facebook going back and forth on some of this today also, and I had a conversation with Matt Lombardo from the Fanatic, who I know from, I've known him for 5 or 6 years, maybe even longer. And you know, one thing we're going back and forth, but one thing we agree on, though, by the way, is that I think Malcolm Jenkins, I'm glad you brought him up, his message is a little different than Colin Kaepernick's. And I think Kaepernick, with the anti-police, some would even interpret anti-U.S. message, where I think Malcolm Jenkins, and we'll see, we don't know what they're going to do Monday night, but his seems to be, like, you know, pushing the discussion. Hey, it might make people uncomfortable, but, you know, we're looking for solutions, which include, as he said in his comments, include the police. You know, it's not an anti-police. It's a, you know, we have a problem. We all got to work together as a community. I think he's taking his approach, certainly, to the same issue, maybe it's a related issue, is very different than the Colin Kaepernick attitude. Gordon, I do have to come back to one, because now this won't apply to the Eagles, but it's something that I brought up in my column, and you and I had the same reaction to his socks. But let's take it away from Colin Kaepernick for a second. I did have a problem with the protests on 9/11 during the national anthem. That did bother me. Did that bother you?
I think it's poor form. Yeah, I think you got to put everything aside on 9/11, and then, you know, and then, you know what you could do? If they ask you, if you're one of the players that, you know, has a voice, if you're one of the more vocal players in your particular city that reporters kind of go to, and we know how it works. Reporters always have go-to players, you know, and Jenkins is that guy on the Eagles along with some other guys. You can say, look, we thought about it, but we just didn't think 9/11 was the time to do it, and you gain a lot of respect doing that. So if you do decide to do something, or you do want to further the conversation, I think you have a lot more credibility at that point. I thought it was really poor form to do it on 9/11, and I was really surprised to see it. Well, nothing really surprises me anymore, but, you know, I was really surprised to see it. And, you know, the Eagles doing it now, you know, it really puts Doug Peterson in a tough spot as a coach who I think is kind of in a honeymoon period with the fan base. You know, he's saying he's going to support the players, and I guess he doesn't really have much of a choice. But, you know, he doesn't want to lose his team, you know, two games into a season. But he might lose the fan base a little sooner as well by supporting the team. Then again, if he gets off to like a 5-2 start or something, I guess everybody would forget about it. We know how that is. I mean, Michael Vick went from one place to another place with the fan base just from playing well. So, I seen things posted on Facebook from people saying, well, you know, the police shouldn't provide security for them at the game, and you know, just stuff like that. It's nonsense, really. I mean, you're just almost making the case for them if you're going to say we're not going to serve and protect everybody who's, you know, exercising their constitutional rights. So you can bounce it back and forth, ping pong it back and forth, and make good points both ways. But you know what I'm starting to be concerned about here is, where's the end game? Where does this end up? Does this end up with no national anthem being played anymore? You know, does this end up with national anthem being played with teams still in the locker room? I don't know where this ends up. I don't know what the end game is, and I don't know what the end result is, because I don't think it may further the conversation, but I don't think it's going to stop any police shooting of unarmed black men, you know, completely in the country, or unwarranted police stops, or all the other things they're talking about 100%. And you know, I just don't know what the end game is, and that's really something I think everybody on both sides really needs to think about.
Well, good point, Gordon. And that was my last question. Is going to go. I should point out, and you brought it up. Malcolm Jenkins was specifically asked about last week, where the Eagles took part in a beautiful ceremony with the giant American flag, and he said they had talked about doing the protest last week, and because it was 9/11, they thought, as you put it, in poor form to do so. And especially with the first responders part of that ceremony, along with Vice President Joe Biden, but the first responders were also holding onto the flag. The Eagles, I think, wisely decided that would be a bad idea to do it on that day, and out of respect didn't do it. And I think that's in keeping with what you said. So, you know, I thought that Malcolm Jenkins a little different than some of the other people maybe who are doing these things. And you brought up the national anthem and what the end game is, and that brings me to my last point. In my column, you know, one of the points I really made is that the national anthem, to me, at sporting events, has always been a unifying moment. It doesn't matter. And I went back and I watched from the Phillies, if you remember, it was after 9/11, 15 years ago, on September 17th, when sort of baseball came back after having a couple of days where they didn't have any games because of, you know, fear of terrorist attacks on places with large gatherings of people. And Harry Callis just put it beautifully. So it doesn't matter about religion, race, creed. You know, everybody stood together, and I always found the national anthem to be that, where everybody's kind of together. I find sports to be that, actually. You know, where you're rooting, and it doesn't matter what your race or religion or how old you are or whatever, you're on the same side. And it bothers me, and I respect their right to do it, but it bothers me that they do it during the national anthem. And to me, and like I said, I'm not talking about the Eagles in specifics. We don't know what they're going to do. But the Kaepernick thing does bother me, and I've seen people at other sporting events do this, ranging down all the way down to the high school level at this point. So, Gordon, here, end game, and this is what you brought up. And so my question to you is the question I asked in my column. Do you think that using the national anthem as the vehicle to protest almost overshadows, then that becomes the issue rather than furthering the conversation? That's, I guess, my problem with the whole thing, and you talk about end game. You know, by doing it during the national anthem, yes, it gets a lot of attention, but have they almost, you know, is it an ineffective protest because now we have a national anthem debate rather than a really much talk about the issue of social justice and oppression?
Exactly. I mean, I don't, in all these conversations I get in on Facebook, it's really not so much, maybe it was initially, but not so much anymore, should they or shouldn't they? I mean, it's all just should he or shouldn't they, you know? And it's a terrible or is it not terrible? And, you know, and nobody's really talking about the issues at all. So, you know, I just think it's gotten to the point that it's unoriginal. It's just kind of something to do. It's putting coaches in an awkward spot. It's putting It's putting players who don't want to do it in an awkward spot. What if there's a player who grew up in a military family or something that doesn't want to, you know, but doesn't want to be alienated by his teammates? I mean, it's becoming a strange thing. And, you know, fans who love these players, you know, who want to stand up, who like that moment when they stand up and everybody's unified in the stands, and yet the people that they're cheering for are kneeling down or whatever they're going to do. And, you know, I really don't know. You know, I don't know what the end game is. You know, the league makes it difficult. You know, I brought that up at the beginning, kind of half jokingly about, you know, you can't wear because you know, it's not an Under Armour, it's not part of uniform code, and you know, maybe these guys would want to wear a black armband, or they'd want to do something else to call attention to it, and they probably would get fined or, you know, things like that, and you know. You're almost leaving it with no choice but to pick the national anthem out because, you know, it's kind of a gray area right now. So unless somebody pulls the employer-employee thing on them, and that would be kind of difficult now. So, you know, I guess you just think maybe it's going to be a fad that's going to play itself out. But, you know, it's a shame because it is a serious issue, and to just kind of reduce it to the level of a fad, that'll just kind of become passé at some point. That's okay in one aspect, but on the other hand, is the issue resolved? Is the issue discussed? You know, I'd like to see maybe a panel on put ESPN sponsored and have like a debate or a panel of people discuss it back and forth and let people watch it and weigh in on it. And I think that'd be a lot more productive than, you know, at some point, just, you know, whether who's kneeling down or who's not kneeling down or that kind of thing.
That's a great idea, Gordon. That's really a wonderful idea. I would like to see that. And I think you hit on some of the points I made in my column. And, you know, it's almost like it's become divisive. Like, and you said there's not much talk about the actual issues. It becomes about who stands and who doesn't stand. And, you know, I saw it in a high school game that I was at. You know, it was almost a divisive moment in the stands, which I helped squelch before it got worse. And, you know, and you see, there was a picture, I think it was on Philly.com, Woodrow Wilson High School football team, and there's two kids standing, everyone else is kneeling. And you, like you said, wonder what it takes for those guys. You wonder how many others wanted to stand, but did it out of peer pressure. And I saw a video of Colin Kaepernick's high school, by the way, in which you could see players as some of them went down to kneel during the anthem, and you saw other kids looking, or exactly what you said, looking around to see what should I do, you know, and then peer pressure, get down and kneel. So it is it's become a very divisive. It's not the social justice oppression minority issue anymore. It's the should we stand or not stand, and that's become a divisive thing. So, yeah, I think the message is being lost, unfortunately, because I think it's a message worth sending. I just wonder if it's gone through, you know, the wrong way or being done the wrong way to get that to get an effective message out there. But anyway, we spent a lot of time on that. We're going to switch over to football. I will encourage people to read my column on PhillyFanatics.com, which deals with a lot of these issues. And Gordon, one thing we didn't talk about, but which I deal with, is I think it's a different deal when you're representing the United States on a U.S. national team. But we won't go there now. I do address that in my column.
John Tortorella, didn't he say if somebody sits during the national anthem, they can might as well just keep on sitting during the game?
He took a lot of heat for it. And you know what, though? I think he's right, and that's why I can't help but bring it up.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to make a statement, then resign from the U.S. team and say I'm not playing because it's the country.
Right.
Don't wear that USA shirt and then get down and kneel. Megan Rapinoe from women's soccer did the same thing, although I know you don't care about soccer. But
No, I'm talking about sports. Yeah.
I know. All right. Soccer fans, address your hate mail to Gordon Glantz here at PhillyFanatics.com. Let's get to the Eagles game. They are 1-0, and it is week two of the Carson Wentz era. And Monday night, Bright Lights, Big City. Gordon, any questions about whether he's – you know, demeanor-wise, is equipped to handle this? It's weird. I don't even think it's a question. Although I'm asking.
I don't think it's a question. Yeah. I mean, the way he played last week, I mean, there were some peaks and valleys during the course of the game. You know, he started off hot and ended hot, but, you know, in between, they had a couple three and outs, and not that we're not accustomed to those after last season with three and outs, but, You know, I don't think he gets flustered. I don't think being on Monday Night Football is really going to bother him. What could bother him more is opposing teams, and it may take a while developing sort of a book on him, on his tendencies. You know, that'll be the real test. I think, you know, Chicago Bears is certainly a winnable game. I think it's a team they can move the ball on, and I think he could be effective. But, you know, at some point, you know, he's going to, you know, just like a pitcher who goes around the league the first time and then the second time it gets a little different. You know, kind of saw that with Aaron Nola, you know, with the Phillies, you know. So before people kind of put him in Canton, just because, you know, he might play well again this week and he may, you know, Pittsburgh will be a tough game for him. But even if he plays well then, I mean, let's just relax a little. I see good things. He has every tool you could hope for. He has the size, the arm strength, the quick release, the intelligence, the leadership ability. Seems cool under pressure, but I guess until he pulls a game out in the final 2 minutes or something like that, we don't know for sure if it kind of becomes somebody you feel like if he comes on the field with and the game, the ball's in his hands, will he win it or won't he win it? And you always have that sense that he will. We don't know, and that's obviously a mark of a great quarterback as opposed to a good or a very good one. And I think we're going to discuss that a little bit later on if we get into the Hall of Fame. But so, you know, yeah, I mean, I certainly don't feel like I don't want to cover my eyes when he comes on the field. It's not the Brad Gable effect here. You know, I feel like, you know, I'm excited to see what he can do each time he walks on the field. And, you know, as much as I probably would have taken the more, the more conservative route of, you know, starting Chase Daniel maybe up until the bye week. After last week, I certainly feel good about the decision right now that, you know, going with him. You know, I mean, my biggest concern was I saw these first two games as winnable, and they're 50% there. They won the first one, and if they can win the second one, you know, tomorrow night, you know, we're looking at, you know, a 2-0 start, and then they come home against Pittsburgh. It'll be a tough game, but, you know, 2-1 going into the bye week is, you know, look a lot better than 1-2. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But I feel good about it. I'm a little concerned, you know, and we'll get into more of the details, I guess. But I think Ertz not being in the lineup will certainly be.
That was my next question. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go with it. I was going to ask you the effect of Ertz.
I think we saw, you know, we know from the Kansas City offense, you know, the way they use Travis Kelce, caught a lot of passes. It's a real big part of the offense. And Ertz, we saw the way he was used last week. He had 6 catches, and you know, you felt like maybe he really was. You know, that was just almost like a preview of what's yet to come. We could have some 8 to 10 catch games from him, and really stretch the field, and you know, also see Celek, and you know. And you know, week to week, I don't even know what that means. I mean, I know he's rolled out for this week. Week to week could mean he doesn't come back until after Thanksgiving, or it means he comes back after the bye week. I mean, you know, and it sounds like a kind of a, I know he finished the game with this injury, but they kind of built this offense around, you know, an inside out passing game with the backs, a lot of building a running game, swing passes out to the backs. And you know, maybe doing some quick screens with, you know, some of the receivers, and really work in the middle of the field and stretching the seams with the tight ends, and then when you get the opportunity, like they did a couple times last week, to get a wide receiver deep, you have a better chance of doing it than just coming out and throwing long 3 times in a row and figuring one of them will, you know, catch on. So that's a big loss. I mean, one guy should never be a, you know. One guy should never really be a reason that, you know, you could struggle, but this team's I said this before the first game, that they're really predicated a lot on, as much on first downs, getting first downs, as they are on getting touchdowns. And he's a guy who's going to get your first downs. He's going to keep the defense off the field. He's going to shift field position. Time possession's huge. And, you know, we'll have to see how they make up for it, you know. I don't know how healthy Trey Burton is, but perhaps he can kind of fill the void a little bit as a pass-receiving tight end because, you know, if you take Celek out of the blocking, Celek's a pretty good receiver. He can't get as deep as Ertz, but if he's not staying in the block as much, that could have a whole ripple effect. So it is a big loss.
Yeah, I think you hit on it. To me, where they're going to miss him, where they're going to miss Ertz is – you know, 3rd and 5, you know, those type of plays. Or as we saw in the opener, you know, 4th and 4. I don't think it's any accident that play was designed to go to Ertz. Right. He's the reliable guy out there. I mean, he's the guy who's going to catch the ball, you know, when you really need him to. And Jordan Matthews had a terrific first game, and maybe he should be in that conversation too. But Ertz is the guy who, you know, you know is going to get open. You know, if the ball hits him, he's going to catch it. And really, that's, you know, I think that's where they'll miss him. That's that safety valve or the big play guy that you know you're going to go. You know, not meaning the deep ball, which he's good at too, but meaning, you know, that big third and six to keep the chains moving or whatever it is. And you know, that's where you go to Ertz, and they're not going to have that. But, yeah, you know, we'll see. I think it's a good challenge. You know, the one thing that, like you said, we're not ready to put – some people are ready to put Wentz in the Hall of Fame, but maybe we're not. Really like him. I think one area certainly it'll be interesting to watch is touch on screen passes. I mean, he had two screen passes batted down, and he's 6'5". I think, maybe it's the angle. I don't know. I didn't watch the tape, so to speak, but for that. You know, I did rewatch the game, I will say, but not for that in particular. You know, there's certainly some, but he's accurate. He throws well. He's calm in there. His demeanor. I would like to see him not take quite as many hits. He's tough. I love his toughness, but you know, I don't want to see him go through 16 weeks of, you know, getting hit that much. And the Bears do have some guys, Gordon, that they signed in the offseason, Danny Trevathan, Jarrell Freeman, both linebackers, and a guy I know you pay a lot of attention to the draft. Guy they took number 9. Maybe you could help talk a little bit about what he adds to them, Leonard Floyd. As a pass rusher, what does he do and what do they have to watch out for with him?
I'm drawing a blank on Leonard Floyd, to tell you the truth.
Leonard Floyd, I said. I'm sorry. He's he was 9th overall out of Georgia. They sort of use him as a linebacker. Based on last week, so I'll just – this is, I think it
– He's kind of a hybrid guy.
Yes, yeah. And they moved him around and rushed him from different places. And that's what I was going to ask you. The other thing with Wentz is, Wentz did a really good job on blitzes. He seemed to make the right read and pick it up. And that's what I was going to ask you. Do you think the Bears? John Fox is a pretty good, experienced coach. Do you think the Bears will try to come at him with blitzes from different directions, or do you think they saw enough last week to say, you know what, this guy almost has a veteran presence of picking up the blitz. Let's play it safe.
No, I think, and with some of the guys you mentioned, and Floyd's an example, and he had a half a sack last week, and some of the guys they signed, even if you don't have big name guys, I think at home and there'll be crowd noise and it's always second. It's always tough to kind of duplicate that first effort where everything kind of went well for you. And if I were him, I would. I certainly would. You know, he didn't really. I know on his college career and the one time he played in the preseason, he showed a lot of escapability and running ability. But last week, he didn't really show it that much. I mean, there's one time he kind of ran away out of bounds and got like a yard gain and that kind of thing. But you know, that's where the screen, and you mentioned the screen, is really important. You know, I really think Darren Sproles is a key guy in the offense, even with Ertz, and without Ertz, he's even more important. And you know, a couple of those screens that were batted down were two almost a huff, and I think one or two of them were to Sproles. Sproles dropped two, and another one was knocked down. That was supposed to be to Sproles. I was watching a little closely because he was on my fantasy team when I started him last week, thinking he would get a lot of screen passes. But, yeah, I mean, so, of course, you know, as the rule goes, I didn't start him this week, so I'll probably catch about 10 passes tomorrow night. And that's okay because I think that would be good news for the Eagles. Sproles is a big part of the offense. And, you know, I think that kind of goes back to screen game is really – it has a lot to do with, repetitions in practice. And it's maybe that him not getting all those reps in the preseason, maybe it's why the screens weren't really clicking the way we would have hoped. So – But I'm sure they keep working on it, and, you know, they're going to need it. A team's going to come with a pass rush, and if it's not going to be the Bears this week, and if they're able to pick it up, somebody's really going to get in his face sooner or later, so they're going to need to be prepared for it. And a way to counter that, especially when it's not on a third and long, a way to counter that is screens and draws and to kind of keep the defense honest, and keep that. There's always ways to counter everything. You just need to be prepared to do it and to execute it when the time comes.
Gordon, 20 seconds. Give me a prediction. 20 seconds. Give me the score.
I like the Eagles. Eagles defense really excites me. Jay Cutler doesn't excite me, and you know, Eagles special teams is always an X factor. You know, with a big return, with a block, with you know, just maybe pinning a team deep. So, you know, I kind of like the Eagles 24-16.
Yeah, for the same reasons. I think their defense will harass Jay Cutler into mistakes. If you leave him alone, he's got a great arm, but if you harass him, he throws a lot of interceptions. 19-17. So thank you for those listening live. Thank you. We're going to move into archives. Let's talk some Hall of Fame. PhillyFanatics.com. Great stuff up there. Eagles preview. We'll have an Eagles game soon tomorrow. My column on the national anthem. Thank you for listening. All right. So Gordon, the NFL came up with a lengthy list of 94. We both picked the Eagles,
yeah,
by the way, there.
Yeah.
It's probably bad news for the Eagles. Came out with a list of 94 players, some of whom are eligible for the first time. And just to ask you about the Hall of Fame chances of a couple of these guys, and if you want me to, I do have, I've called up the quarterback, the players at that position, which sometimes, you know, they're not going to put in five quarterbacks the same year. But anyway, first time eligible, and it is Donovan McNabb. Does he get in this year, and does he get in at all?
If I'm voting, I don't vote for him. And I know, you know, I guess that makes me a bad Eagles fan, but I just don't think he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. Maybe one day, if there's somebody, you know, I'm on a Hall of Fame committee on the Montgomery County Coaches Hall of Fame, which is obviously on a lot different level. But,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
we do kind of look at, well, if we put this guy in who won two state titles, you know, how can we not put in another guy who won three state titles? Or, you know, it kind of, you know, so if the bar gets, I don't want to say the bar gets lowered, but if another quarterback gets in who kind of has similar numbers or even less numbers than McNabb, or, you know, also hasn't won a Super Bowl, or who, you know, quote unquote, hasn't won the big one, and, you know, then I guess you kind of can look at it again down the road. But right now, I just don't see him at all as a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and I'm with you, and I definitely not this year, and I wouldn't vote for him either. I think he falls into the very good category, not the what I consider Hall of Fame. The quarterbacks on there just I'll run. We won't do this with every position. Just the quarterbacks. It's an interesting collection of people. One former Eagle, Randall Cunningham, Drew Bledsoe, Doug Flutie, Steve McNair, Phil Sims, and Kurt Warner. And maybe, I don't know if you agree or not, I think if anybody gets in off that group, I think number one here is Kurt Warner.
Yeah, I'd have to say Kurt Warner. I mean, and then probably Phil Sims. And Cunningham's one of my favorite all-time Eagles. I have a Cunningham jersey that I got as a gift last year, and I'm going to unveil it this year since my Montgomery jersey has been bad luck. My Wilbur Montgomery jersey, and I named my dog Randall. I love Randall Cunningham, but, you know, for a lot of the same reasons that Donovan McNabb, I don't think, is a Hall of Fame quarterback. I don't think Randall Cunningham is either. Now, he helped himself a little bit by that great year he had when he came out of retirement in Minnesota.
Yeah.
You know, I think he might have won Comeback Player of the Year, and that also that helps your resume a lot. He might have won some other awards that year as well. But, you know, I'd have to go back and look. But, again, you know, it's got to be for greats, not very goods. And in football, the Football Hall of Fame has kind of a different standard than some of the other Halls of Fame. They judge greats by rings. And, you know, whether you agree that the ring's a thing or not, that's kind of the standard they go by. Certainly with quarterbacks, that's the standard you go by. You know, maybe a receiver can't help what team he was on, or some other positions they can't help what team they were on. But, you know, a quarterback really controls a lot of the fate's in his hands a lot more. And if they have a long career and get close a little bit and put up some good numbers but never won a ring, then, you know, you have to knock them down a few pegs for it. So, Warner did it. Phil Sims did it, and those would be the guys I would have to consider voting for.
Okay, another first-time eligible safety, Brian Dawkins.
Now, Brian Dawkins is a different story, and again, it's kind of what I talk about. You know, whether or not you did or didn't win a Super Bowl, but you know, he's he's not in a spot where you can control the game quite as much. You can only do so much from the safety position. And I think there were a couple situations that I can remember with Brian Dawkins where the Eagles entered December pretty much needing to win. You know, I think there was one end of the season, maybe it was December, maybe one game early in January, or where they had five games left and another one maybe the last four games, and they needed to win like four of the last five, and another one they needed to all the last games, and maybe they needed to win three of the last four in December to make the playoffs. And both of those years they made the playoffs. This was in the Andy Reid era. And in both of those months, both of those Decembers, he was a defensive player of the month. So that's a guy who took as much into his hands as he could to almost will a team into a playoff berth. For a stretch, and not just a stretch of one season, but I would say a stretch of a few seasons, he was the best at his position in the league. I know some people might argue Ed Reed, but there might have been a stretch where Ed Reed was the best safety in football and kind of gave that, and then Brian Dawkins kind of took that over. So, and maybe there might have been an overlap where you could argue one or the other, but I think they both had their little stretch in there where they were the best safety in football. When you were the best at your position in the league for a couple seasons and, like I said, willed the team, defensive player of the month when a team needed to win practically every game or three out of four games or four out of five games to make the playoffs, twice in your career. I think that's great stuff. I talked about being great, not very good. And, the Eagles have had a lot of great safeties, or a lot of great or good safeties in their history. And he's number one, and I know it's not about the Eagles when you're looking at a league Hall of Fame, but if you put it in that context, when you consider all the really outstanding safeties the Eagles have had, the Bradleys and Wes Hopkins and all kinds of guys that, for him to be the one that really stands out just here, I mean, and you put it in a league-wide context, I think it's a no-brainer. And also, add on when he went to Denver, he was continued to be played at an all-pro level. So,
yeah, I think the tough thing, and sometimes they make people wait their turn, and there were two of the finalists of the Final 15 last year were safeties, Steve Atwater and John Lynch. I think Dawkins over Lynch is a no-brainer, and I would take him over Atwater as well. But sometimes sometimes they'll say, these guys were finalists last year. So I'm not sure he gets in this year, but I think he does eventually get in. I'm going to run down a couple other names. I'm only going to ask your opinion on the last one I give you, but just for people in terms of ex-Eagles, at the defensive back position, Eric Allen and Troy Vincent are both in there. We already mentioned Randall Cunningham. There's some other ex-Eagles on here. Sean Landetta in the punter category is eligible. Brian Mitchell, eligible under special teams. Dick Vermeil. I wish we had time to talk about the coaches. We don't. There's a lot of really interesting names on that coaching list. Herschel Walker also there, and Ricky Waters, both under the running back position. But the guy I want to ask you about, Gordon, because he was a finalist last year, and that is Terrell Owens. Does Terrell Owens get in this year?
Yeah, Terrell Owens, I just don't know if he has a lot of love out there from people. It's kind of a shame. Here's the thing, I guess. Well, it's almost like you can sum up Terrell Owens' whole career. What would he go in as? What team? What team would he even go in as? I guess he would go in as a 49er. That's where he kind of made the name for himself. But that he kind of bounced around so much and was, a sort of a malcontent everywhere he went. But great talent. And really, again, like I said, like Dawkins, probably, for a stretch, the best at his position. Does he get in or should he get in? I think he should get in. Does he get in? Probably not. I will want to add real quick, Dick Vermeil, to me, should get in. I mean, he came out of retirement and he won a Super Bowl, and then he almost got the Chiefs pretty close as well. So, and what he did with the Eagles was just, taking them over in that situation they were in with no draft picks and getting them to a Super Bowl. To me, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think Vermeil should get in, too. I just, when I look at it nationally, Don Coryell was a finalist last year. Other guys on this list, like I said, we're not going to have time to go analyze all of them, but you got Bill Cowher, Mike Holmgren, Jimmy Johnson, Chuck Knox, Dan Reeves. There's some pretty good names on that list, but I agree with you also. I think Vermeil eventually should be in the Hall of Fame, and I hope it's sooner rather than later. Gordon, we've had a lot of good conversation. Let's get the final thoughts now.
Well, you talk about protests and what's worth protesting and what's not worth protesting. And I know you and I might disagree on this one, but Temple and Penn State had a game yesterday, and I'm a loyal Temple guy, and I had that once in a lifetime thrill last year of Temple beating Penn State, and I was hoping for the best yesterday, but I knew it would be difficult to get a repeat, and I think Temple kind of shot themselves in the foot and made it a competitive game, and they certainly didn't embarrass themselves. It was a one touchdown game. They actually had the ball down a score late, at the end of the game, and it would have been a long, in like 35 seconds to drive the length of the field would have been difficult, but they did put themselves in that situation. So, I feel actually came away from that game feeling better about Temple now than going into the game. I think they can now move on and win some games in their league and at least get themselves, originally I was thinking about 9 or 10 wins, but at least get themselves to 7 or 8 wins and get to a minor bowl game. But, there was a ceremony before the game. They were honoring Joe Paterno, and I don't want to get into all the details, but I just kind of feel that those wounds are still a little fresh. There may be a point in time where you can honor Joe Paterno. I get it. I get what he meant to the university there. I know it was the anniversary of his 50th season or 50th whatever it was, first win. But you can always find another anniversary of something. You could wait 5 years and make it the 55th anniversary of the first time he did something to something else, and whatever, and you could probably just let those wounds heal a little bit. And I just kind of think that people at Penn State live a little bit in a bubble about the realities of how the situation's perceived, and I think accurately perceived by the outside world. And and I do know, and there were some protests there. There were some protests outside, and it didn't get the same type of media coverage that the NFL does. But and it was some Temple people, but it was also a lot of Penn State people. And I think it was actually the Penn State student newspaper had written a lot of editorials saying that it was wrong, and I think that got a lot of people to protest it as well. So, that's a case where I think a protest is in order, and I'm glad they did it. I don't know, it didn't get much coverage, but I think it was a worthwhile thing to do.
It just to clarify, it was the 50th anniversary of his first win there. So you're right, yeah. You're right. I respect what you just said, and I disagree with a little bit of it, not all of it. I think some of it's on point. But I'm not going to use the host prerogative for having the final word. I'll just let your word stand rather than ours. I'm going to throw a couple things out there. I'm going to do three quick ones. All NFL. One amazing thing happened in the NFL today, Gordon. I don't know if you saw this, but Kiko Alonso made a play today. Kiko Alonso crushed Jimmy Garoppolo, the quarterback of the Patriots, and knocked him out with what looks like to be a long-term shoulder injury, although obviously we don't know. And, of course, with Tom Brady suspended, they put in Jacoby Brissett. But it was Kiko Alonso with the big hit on the quarterback that knocked him out, which just floored me. Speaking of ex-Eagles, Sam Bradford expected to make his first start tonight for the Vikings. No easy assignment. They faced the Packers. And I guess I'm going to shift sports here, though. This was my planned final thought before the NFL stuff kind of got in there. And that is, believe it or not, it is Flyers and Sixers season coming up. Both teams start their camps this coming week, Flyers right away, the beginning of the week. I think it's the 21st. And most of the guys are already in camp now. And the Sixers open camp on the 27th. And a little different feeling around the Sixers this year, which we can talk about more next week. And the week after, which will be the Eagles bye week.
Let me just sneak in real quick. Actually, just Kiko Alonso had 12 tackles last week. So, I'm just thinking, I don't know if he had 12 tackles all last season for the Eagles. And there's also a hilarious clip that's already up, one of my friends put up on Facebook, of Byron Maxwell completely whiffing on an open field tackle. And if you have a chance, check that one out as well. So I'm sure it's all over YouTube.
Well that he did do last year. So
we
saw enough of that. The Alonso
he's back at it again, so.
I won't even go there. I don't regret giving up Kiko Alonso. I don't care if he becomes an All-Pro. That's it for this week's show. Gordon, great stuff today. Great analysis on the Hall of Fame and the Eagles, and of course on the national anthem. Please check out PhillyFanatics.com. We will be coming to you at a special time in the next 2 weeks, and we will have that up on the website for the time. So that's it for this week. Thank you for listening. For Gordon Glanz, I am Eric Fisher. Have a great week, everybody.